here we are. All of us are still in the game. None of us are sidelined. Hello, everybody. Pick Six Podcast. Sam McEwen, Tom Chattel, Dirk Chatwin. We're all healthy. Nebraska basketball team, unfortunately, is not. And we will talk about the Huskers' loss in Northwestern and what is going to happen over the last 10 games here. We will dive deep into that here today. I want to thank everybody for listening and remind everyone who listens to the Pick Six Podcast to subscribe to the Omaha World Herald. You can do that at www.omaha.com/subscribe. Remember, you get 26 weeks for $1. What is today? January something. 26th. 26th?
26th.
Today is January 26th. This thing is going to take you all the way up through late July. We're going to have a cool feature this summer on 100 years with Memorial Stadium. Just telling you about it now. People are going to like it. It's going to be fun. You're going to get most of that if you sign up for today. And by then, you're going to want to have all of it because then training camp starts. And, man, you just got to get rolling. So subscribe to the Omaha World Herald. We're going to talk a little basketball today. A little Matt Rhule and his interview on Bussin' with the Boys. Things that seem to be going on in the athletic department. We'll talk a little bit about
that,
too.
We need a bus, don't we? We should have a bus.
I'd love to have a bus. My nephew is going to join the van life, Marcus. So he's
big step.
He's gotten the van. And it's like it's not quite a bus, well, but you know what I mean? Like it's like a big like a mini bus.
Maybe we need a van. Just you know, Walt Compton goes to the bus, we had the van.
I would not.
We have a river. We have a river right down here.
I can tell you what. I actually would like to take a van, a World Herald van, and just go through like Western Nebraska and just like go to all those small towns.
Inspired by Ed Foley.
Ed Foley is going to right now.
I've since I followed him on Twitter. I think I've gained 10 pounds.
Oh no! Hey, now Central Nebraska you can eat. You know this. You can eat in Central Nebraska.
He went to my alma mater this morning.
Oh, he did?
Yeah.
Well, that's great.
He's coming back south. Then.
They've actually got you know some players that come through there every so often. Some of these schools he went to, God bless him. I'm like, you're just there because there might be a kid 6 years from now. Like, they don't have anybody right
at this moment. It's got nothing to do with recruiting at this point. He's just out there strolling the countryside.
I kind of like that part of the state, too. Like, I, you know, you lived, obviously, near Columbus, your whole life. I lived in Grand Island for like 3.5 years, and I liked it. Like I, you know, it's the flattest city maybe in America, but like I liked Grand Island and St. Paul and Kearney and Highway 30 and Central City, and you know, like we drive through all these small towns in Central Nebraska. And like I said, back when I was a kid, you could eat. Like I was already fat when I moved there, but I got fatter. Because you can eat in Central Nebraska. He should have went to Coney Island and Grand Island, though. That would have been my suggestion. You ever been there?
I thought he did. He had this
he went to a different place. This is also very good.
This hot dog with jalapenos all over it.
It was very good, but Coney Island is the original hot lunch.
I would like to ask him at the end of this process, and maybe I need to go through, too, and count how many counties I've been to in Nebraska, okay? And then compare it to how many counties he's going to have been through in Nebraska. Because he's on pace to hit all 93 by, like, Easter.
Have you been through all 93?
No.
What region of the state is this part of the state where you haven't been?
I would say my weak spot is probably South Central. Like, you know, I went to Goodland, Kansas one time to see Brooke Behringer's mom. And so I drove through there. And I've been, you know, been to McCook to play golf. But not much time in... You know, south of Kearney, south of North Platte.
My first 3 years, and I sold the when I did my job interview.
This was awesome that you did this. I read all these stories.
Yeah. My first 3 years, I said I sold. I'm a job interview here. I sold them. I said I'm going to get in a car every summer and drive around the state, and I'll do columns on different things. And they said that was great. So I had to do. Now I got to do it, okay? So I did it for the first 3 summers. And
it's a great way to know the state.
I really hit a lot of good I went up to the far northwest part.
You were single. That helped.
Oh, yeah.
Well, by Toadstool Park?
Yeah, up there.
Yeah, it's beautiful. It's unbelievable.
I went through, like, Norfolk, O'Neill, And then I went to Valentine all the way to the west corner.
Gorgeous. Highway 20.
Yeah, well, yeah, where Danny Wood had played.
Shadron.
And,
he played at college.
And there were all kind of different kind of animals out there. That was just, it was just a cool place to drive.
It's unbelievable.
And then Scott's Bluff. And then I came back and I interviewed Scott Frost and his family. He sat in their living room and interviewed the whole family. And
whatever happened to that guy?
I don't know. Whatever happened to him? He's got a house. I heard he built a house. But then I ended up, in the next year I went to Auburn to see the Kelsey's family. And I drove down, I think it was Highway 6. It kind of cuts across the south central part of Nebraska.
Yes, yeah.
All the way through. And
have you been to Pioneer Village? Have you seen a broom at Pioneer Village?
I did, and but the far northeast part, I have not been up there.
Landman's up there. When you're a student in Grand Island Elementary School, I think you go 1 year to Pioneer Village, like go there.
I've never been to Struer Museum. Have you?
I have. Oh, okay, yeah. We went there every year. And cool,
is
just
it?
So we're clear. Yes.
There's
yes.
like a, we drove by there like 2 weeks ago or a month ago, and there's like a buffalo out back.
Oh yeah, it's like, well, they have an old little town there. And you could go and like look at a blacksmith and
see. We're doing wonders for Nebraska tourism right now.
Oh yeah, hey, I love Nebraska. Yeah. Love it.
One of my favorite memories is I went out to do a Woodhead story. I went out twice actually to write Woodhead stories. One of my just most delightful moments was getting game film of Danny Woodhead in college. Oh my gosh, just unbelievable. It was like, you know, as excited as people would get watching LeBron James in high school, you know, that was me watching Danny Woodhead at Shadron State.
Oh, I'm sure it was something. It was like, well, probably like if Darren Sproles had played in D2.
Well, they were basically the same player.
That's right.
But anyway, on the way back, there's a huge thunderstorm rolling across Nebraska, west to east.
Oh.
And I'm behind the thunderstorm, okay? And my car is moving faster than the thunderstorm. If I keep driving, I'm going to drive right into it. And I'm on Highway 2 going through the sand hills, mowing, and, you know. And I just stop. I just stop on the side of the road. Nowhere else to stop. I'm like, okay, if I keep driving, I'm just going to drive into this thing. So I just stop on the side of Highway 2, pull over on the shoulder, sit on the hood of the car for like 45 minutes, just watching this thing, just a gorgeous September night.
That's awesome.
Watching this thing roll across the, you know, the sand hills. And I'll never forget it. It was like the most Nebraska moment I've ever had, I think.
It's beautiful.
Is Danny Woodhead the Larry Bird of Nebraska? I mean, we've always said Tom Crop was, but is he, you know, Larry Bird went to Indiana and said, it's too big, I'm going back. Danny never got the chance to do that.
I think it's still Crop. I think Crop is still Larry Bird.
Yeah.
But I remember Woodhead, you know, during writing that story, Nebraska had Marlon Lucky, Brandon Jackson, Cody Glenn, and one other highly touted running back. And there was, you know, like some of us were making the argument that, well, I remember what it was. The Montana State head coach I talked to, who had played both Colorado and Shadron State, and the Montana State coach was telling me, Danny Woodhead's better than anybody Colorado has. And, you know, back then, like, you just don't believe it.
Right.
Like, you just, until a guy gets to the NFL and you're like, oh, okay, he is better than Marlon Lucky. The idea that Danny Woodhead could be better than anybody at Nebraska was such a, you know.
It was mind-blowing.
It was a mind-blowing concept for anybody in the state.
And that Nebraska, if Nebraska thought he wasn't good enough, then he must not have been. And
yeah.
Of course, Frank was wrong.
Yeah, and then Danny proved it. Danny went to the NFL
ever should have seen an undersized.
I know.
Would have been Frank, right?
And he was a great recruiter and recruited some of the great Nebraska running backs in school history.
Yeah.
So, he earned the right to make that
mistake. Think about that. Danny Woodhead was better than Marlon Lucky.
He was.
And Marlon Lucky was the number one running back in the country.
That's right.
Out of high school.
If he had played in Nebraska and gone into, you know, we'd have, like, a bowl game and win a game with it, I mean, he'd be the one with all-time legends.
Yeah, he was better than Rex Burkhead.
He'd be one of the, I mean, but he's done okay for himself.
He would have been a modern-day Bobby Reynolds.
If you want to find him, he's probably playing golf in the snow right now.
There are actually examples of this littered throughout Nebraska basketball's history. And I was thinking a little bit last night about how, you know, if Nebraska had some of the in-state kids who left,
and
quite frankly went to better programs than Nebraska, but nevertheless left, how that game would have looked differently, and that you wouldn't even have had to rely on transfers. And I'm thinking, of, you know, obviously I'm thinking of Chucky at Wisconsin, but I'm thinking of John Tonji. I'm thinking of other guys. I mean, Tonji's at Colorado State. I'm thinking of other guys too. And I'm just struck by that, you know, Nebraska is in a tough spot. They're 10-11 overall. Tom wrote a column last night or today, whatever, that would indicate to me it's going to be a tough road, you know, tough road. They might have two or three wins left. They're playing, they started three freshmen last night. Hoiberg's kid played and played pretty well, but he hasn't really played those kind of minutes all season. And then you, Tom, you were at the game. You're standing there. When you come off the court of Pinnacle Bank Arena, there's a corridor. You come down a tunnel, and there's a locker room. And you're watching the players and the coaches. It's about a 40-foot walk. What did you see?
Well, I saw the kind of body language from the coaches that you don't want to see. It's the kind of body language that indicates that this may not end well, and this is going to be tough, and they know they're in a tough spot. I touched on that too. What, you know, we kind of assumed going, you know, I have anyway, that when you've won the kind of games they have and you've shown the kind of progress, I mean, it's clearly the best team he's had. I think he was going to get next year. I still kind of lean that way, but if this ends up to be like 12-19 or something, I don't know. I don't know. I mean, I think you could say, well, they had the injuries. But boy, you should have, by year four, maybe you should have had the roster set up better for this. Or it's just a tough deal. So it's going to be, I still, you know, and I think, and again, we have to see how it goes. If they end up winning a few, what if they, you know, win a few more? They've got games at home, you know, Minnesota, Penn State,
Wisconsin
isn't one. What if they win those somehow? You know, Walker and Griesel, you know, put the world on our shoulders and carry them with these three wins. Then I think it's fine. I mean, that's a pretty good coaching job if you can figure that out. But right now, it doesn't look good, and you know, Trev was not known for basketball at UNO. He's at Nebraska. He's known for he wants to win at everything. So, it's going to be a sort of one of those little sidebars or little things to keep kind of keep an eye on.
Isn't it amazing how they're so awful this time of year? Like the program, you know, every once in a while they'll sort of, like last year, they kind of catch a little bit of wind at the end of the year. You know, they win three in a row at the end of last year. Tim Miles got hot in the Big Ten tournament. But, man, Nebraska in like late January through February, Nebraska basketball over the last 5 years, it feels like they win about one out of 20 games.
It's true.
It's a tough time.
Big Ten never does them any favors schedule-wise, but you're right.
I think it's a little bit Frost-like in that if he's sort of paying for his past sins right now, if this was year one or two, you know, you'd kind of shrug it off and be like, oh, that's bad luck, man. But like, he hasn't built up any equity. So it's hard to make an argument. It's really hard to make an argument that, well, okay, if they go 12-18, let's say they go 12-18 or 12-19 or whatever it would be. You know, how do you make an excuse that, well, he lost his best couple players when the previous 3 years, you know, they weren't any good? So, like, what are you building belief on? Like, the idea that they're going to find another Bandamel, another Griesel? There's nothing in the you know, young classes of the program that would indicate that it's going to get better. So you got to go out and recruit transfers. And by doing that, you're basically trying to get lucky. There's just nothing sustainable. There's no continuity. So while I really liked this team, I think it's hard to make an argument aside from pure finances that it's going to get better. And I think, man, at a program like Nebraska, like you would hope that if you're retaining a coach after 4 years with this kind of record, the hope is that it's going to get better. And I just,
well,
it's hard to make that case.
That's absolutely right. But you're right. It's no way to run a basketball program in the Big Ten. And so, I mean, I think we'll find out if things go the way we think they are, we'll find out how much basketball means to Trev. And, you know, the excuse always in Nebraska is, well, they just don't care. So let's just kick it on down the road and try again. And we just don't care. It's all about football. But think about the Big Ten isn't that good this year. It's just even like Illinois can be had.
Yeah.
That's one of your top teams. And there's just no great teams. Maybe Purdue. But even they came into Lincoln. I mean, they have their deals where the Big Ten is tough because everybody can coach. But, man.
Well, the fact that Purdue's number one in the country indicates that there are no great teams in college basketball, period.
One great team, one bad team, a bunch of teams that can beat each other up.
And I would not pick a Big Ten team to go to the Final Four. I wouldn't do it right now.
Neither would I. I don't think Purdue is built to go to the Final Four because teams with 7'4" centers don't make the Final Four.
They don't.
Well, okay, Chet Holmgren could have, but he's a different 7'4". He's 7'1" shooter.
I don't mean to be on the bandwagon, but I will watch at K-State right now. I mean, if K-State did, then Iowa State could have buried him, and they came back and held these tough shots, and they just don't care. And somebody like that's going to go to the Final Four.
What if I told you that the best player on that team was going to come to Nebraska, but he wasn't cleared?
Right.
So I want to do two thought exercises. That's the second one, the one to Keyonte Johnson. Here's the first one. What was special, and when did Tim Miles' second team get hot? Because Tim Miles got 7 years in Nebraska, and he got 7 years because of year two. He didn't get 7 years because of anything else. He got 7 years because of year two, and when did that team turn the corner?
The point of the calendar? Mm-hmm. Well, the biggest win was February 14th or 15th at Michigan State. That it was very late, you're right. They were just kind of plodding along through the first half to two-thirds of conference play, and then they got smoking hot.
Because things weren't going well. I'm going to get to the point here because it's probably not what you expect.
Okay.
What if that team had to go through a month-long COVID pause?
Sam, you're not going to try to tell me that Fred Hoiberg's first team.
His second team.
That had all the same characteristics of last year's team.
Well,
this nobody defends, everybody's selfish, everybody's out to get theirs.
Delano Bent was not selfish.
Oh,
he was
my
benched,
God.
But he wasn't selfish.
That team was awful.
They weren't awful.
Yes, they were. They were awful.
Well, here's what I'm asking you. I think that was his best team. And I think that team was sunk by COVID.
I like this team better if it's all healthy.
Well, I agree with that. I understand the quality of liking the team. I'm saying that if you look at I think that team had a chance to win.
That team 17 went or 18 7 games. And 20.
I know.
I think
I covered the team. I know.
They were 3-16.
This team would have beat that team.
That's possible.
They were 3-16.
They didn't have an answer. They couldn't make a shot. They didn't have an
answer. Now, you're free.
Leading into the COVID pause.
You're free to look at the teams that they played.
Leading into the COVID pause, they had lost 7 games in a row against Division I opponents. Doan College was the exception.
Well, there's some pretty good teams in there. So who'd they play? They played Creighton, which went to the Sweet 16.
They lost to Georgia Tech.
Well, and that team was great. My goodness.
What, Georgia Tech?
Yes, they were very good. Yes,
they went 17-9.
They were good. They went to the NCAA tournament, and one of the players on that team is a hell of a pro.
To your point, Creighton, Wisconsin, they lost by 14.
Wisconsin was good.
Creighton, they lost by 24. Michigan, they lost by 11. Ohio State, they lost by 36.
Elite Eight, Michigan.
Michigan State, they lost by 7 at home. And Indiana, they lost by 8 at home.
And Indiana wasn't very good, and Archie Miller
fired. That team was not good.
Okay, well, here's what I'm saying. Is what if – no, we don't know. I remember – you can laugh all you want, but here's my point. Nebraska, the second season of Tim Miles, I don't know what their record was on January whatever. I don't think it was very good. And then you go into a month-long COVID pause. And that's... So that's... So one season...
Sam,
we have to agree that
one
season... That's
the equivalent of saying, Terry Keneally was a really good player from Hyannis, so Nebraska should go recruit Hyannis every year.
I'm not saying that. I'm these are why I give up these thought exercises. It can be a stupid thought, which maybe it is. But the point is that Tim Miles had one good season until year six. He got to year six because of year two. Because there were a lot of people who thought, and I don't remember what you thought, that he probably should have been let go after year five when they went 12-19. And remember Ty Webster's walking off the court and Steve, you know, he doesn't get his triple double or whatever it was. And so Tim Miles got year six because he had year two. Nebraska didn't have a year two. Okay, they were 7-20, but he didn't have a year two. That's thought exercise number one. Thought exercise number two is the best player on Nebraska's team doesn't play for Nebraska because he couldn't come to Nebraska.
You're going to have to elaborate on that. I know what you're talking about, but I'm not sure all of our readers do.
Like, well, I mean, he was going to he visited Nebraska. Then he wasn't going to come to Nebraska because he went to Kansas State. And that wasn't because Kansas State won the recruiting battle. It's, you know, like there's just. That's a situation that Nebraska could, I'll just say, the coaching staff couldn't control that. They couldn't control it.
He has a heart issue.
Mm-hmm. But he's at Kansas State, and he's averaging 18-7. And is he going to be the Big 12 player of the year? I think he is. Don't you think he deserves to be?
No, Jalen Wilson's going to be the Big 12 player of the year.
Okay. If Kansas State wins the Big 12?
That's a big if.
I mean, he's the reason, right? Like, he's the biggest reason why.
Well, some would say the coach, too, but fair. I don't know. I don't follow him closely enough to know. But
if you took that guy right. And he was on Nebraska's team, they wouldn't be 10-11. Well, he would be the best the player thing, that Sam. Nebraska's had since...
The great,
I don't even know.
The greatest indictment of Fred Hoiberg came from Chris Collins last night when he said, this is the best team since 10 miles. That's what he said. And I'm going, oh, wow.
He said he would play like a Tim Miles team.
This is the warmest day since New Year's. No.
I mean, so what is that? What I mean, you can talk about year one, year two. There's best teams since 10 miles.
I'm just putting
the thought exercise. I love Fred Hoiberg. God, I love Fred Hoiberg. I wanted him to win so bad here. Like, I was... a card-carrying member of the Fred Hoiberg fan club, you know, when he was at Iowa State and the Chicago Bulls, and I made so many excuses why the Bulls thing didn't work out. But my God, can we stop making excuses for this program?
Well,
please, please.
They didn't hurt the guys themselves.
Isaac Copeland blows out his knee. Oh, we didn't make the tournament because of Isaac Copeland.
What's true?
Were losing the game anyway. The season was going down the drain anyway.
Okay,
like. Taran Petaway had personal issues. God forbid that, you know, like, we can't win because Taran Petaway, like,
yeah.
Walt Pitchford's having it, like, personal problem. Like, stop it! Stop making excuses! Stop making it sound like no other program is going through stuff. Like,
that's fair.
Every program has stuff.
That's fair. I feel like you're channeling, maybe not quite at the volume, but... I think Trev Alberts looks at things like that. Like he doesn't really want to hear that it's unfair.
Create
like,
a margin for error for yourself large enough
if it comes down
where something can go wrong and you can still succeed.
Right.
If it comes down to those guys, then you don't have enough.
And I think the biggest question.
I apologize to Taran Petaway. I didn't mean it to
I get it.
To diminish his. Personal.
Well, there was more things
grief.
Going on.
That's not what I meant. I just, my point is like, if you got a point to stuff like that, you're just not good enough.
No, and Tim Miles did stuff that season. That was the season he threw his team out of the locker room for a while. And I think that's a Bush League, Division V kind of move. And he never should have done that. I don't think you do that at that level. So anyway, yeah.
I touched on this morning. The curse of the program is the administrators who don't care enough.
Right.
And I've never, I mean, Danny.
So whoever
Nee,
there cares.
Danny Nee, man, he, you know, but Danny, they kept him too long. They, Barry Collier, we kept way, We kept trying to, you know, it was a Rasputin. You couldn't get rid of him.
Tom, and somebody close to the program, last February, I wrote about Nebraska basketball and all of its problems.
Rasputin.
And someone close to the program said, it is the equivalent of an absentee father who buys the biggest Christmas present and doesn't show up.
We built you this big complex facility. You got facility. You got iPods in the shower. What else do you need? You know, right.
Barry Collier as Rasputin.
With
that's
better,
pretty good.
With better hair. here's the thing. Tim Miles was hired by Tom Osborne and fired by Bill Moose. Think about it. He went through three of them.
Right.
What does that say?
It says a lot.
Nebraska's, I think, afraid to show urgency for two sports. Well, if we care too much about basketball, we'll take away from football.
Right.
And you can do both.
Right. That's fair.
But until you have it, you don't appreciate it, and they've never had it. You know, if they ever have it, they ever get it, they're going to want to keep it. So.
You know what, Tom? That is brilliant. I think that is exactly right. I think that's what it is. They've never had it, and so they don't know how good it is.
Right. How good March can be.
I think that's brilliant. I've never thought of it that way.
We'll renew this conversation next week after they've played Maryland.
Sam, the irony is Tom and I both really like this team.
Yeah.
At full strength.
Sure. Yes, yes.
You know?
They play hard.
They really resonated with the fan base.
Mm-hmm.
It's January 26th. The season's over. They don't have enough talent to do anything anymore. Like, they can't go into games.
If you're Trev, what do you do? Do you assess the team at 10-10 and say, well, you know, there you go? Look at Jamarcus Lawrence and Denham Dawson and say, this is part of what I would do, is I look at Jamarcus Lawrence and Denham Dawson and I guess Casey and, you know, Breidenbach and Ikeda when he comes back, and I said, is this a nucleus around which we can build? Northwestern builds its program. Northwestern can't get transfers usually because most transfers can't, meet their academic standards. So they have one transfer who's really good. That's Chase Audige. He came from William and Mary. The rest of Northwestern's team is built completely through high school recruits. So all the guys they had on the floor, with the exception of Chase Audige, are just sort of developed. Can Fred Hoiberg do that?
They need, you know, Trev needs help here. He needs, and they've never had that. They had some guys before, but Mark Payne.
Yeah.
They need a basketball guy in the building to give him advice. Here's what I see. Here's, you know, Trev, I know you know football, but here's the basketball part of this, and they've never had that. Associate AD for hoops, the guy who can really, you know, give them that.
And there's some guys that you all know, both of you know very well, in Omaha and Lincoln, who I think would be pretty good at that role.
Well, I love it. You know, the first one that comes to mind is the former AD at Creighton. Would you ever hire Rast?
Oh boy, you asked Trev that.
Your basketball.
You
guy.
Asked him that. Remember? And he didn't really. He was like, oh, I don't know. Like,
well,
that's a really interesting. I mean,
I
that would be interesting.
I don't think
Rast
would ever do it. Although. No. Well, that's a whole other topic for a whole other show right now. But anyway.
I think it would.
They've never. The only thing I don't want to see Trev do is have a press conference or a media gathering where there's fruit and cheese on the table. Then I'll lose it.
I believe that.
Nothing against fruit and cheese.
It's simply one of my favorite anecdotes of all time, and I think it's come up three times here in the last 3 months, which is why I love it. Because I'm trying to imagine this was at the Intercontinental Hotel, right?
The Westin,
okay. So right
Westin,
just south of the plaza.
Westin Ground Center, yeah.
Overlooking a beautiful part of that city. I'm just imagining you looking out a window.
The
and
team
turning.
Hotel. we're after another brutal loss in the first round. And we're thinking,
2005.
All right, he's going to get it. But I wasn't thinking, clearly. You don't fire a coach at the team hotel. You go home and do it.
Right.
And so I walk in, and there's fruit, and there's snacks, and there's Mark Boehm and Steve Peterson. And
this story just gets better every time.
I just...
And they told you we're not going. We're going to keep Rasputin.
I'm not
going
to mention the media guys who dove into the food, but I was okay. Well, and then they said what is happening. Then I stormed out the door, and I didn't mean to make a scene. I wasn't trying to.
You didn't make a scene. I was there,
but it was just like
That was my first.
I went back
to
my
World
room and was like pounding the keys like. The poor keyboard.
I'd been at the World Herald for 2 months.
I was pissed. Oh, now I'm not sure I care anymore.
Let's move to another matter of urgency, and that is Nebraska football. Clearly, Matt Rhule is working really hard, and so is his staff, but the head coach sets that culture. They've added, I don't know, 37 players, transfers 11 of those, 26 high school. I think it's going to end up at 38. And then they're probably going to end up with about 43 because they'll add some guys in May. So when I hear that, when I see that, I think, well, look, I mean, it's going to take time for these young guys, who are, like many of whom are developmental players, they're not finished products, to come in, learn the culture, learn the Big Ten, this coaching staff, has very little Big Ten experience. You know what their Big Ten experience is, right? Their primary Big Ten experience? Donovan Raiola. So the 1 year.
Oh, I thought you were going to say they drove through Chicago one time.
Well, yeah. No, just don't. Well, Donovan. You know.
I thought you were
going to
say
Donovan.
I thought you were going to say Matt Rhule's a Penn State grad.
And E.J. Barthel was like at Rutgers as a recruiting coordinator. And Matt, you know, yeah. Matt Rhule was in Penn State in the 90s. So anyway. They don't have a ton of Big Ten experience. So I'm thinking to myself, it's going to take a year. It's got to be a year, right? Like, if ever there was an opportunity for a head coach to say, I want to take a year, and we can't get our, you know, we can't put the cart ahead of the horse, this would be it. So he goes on Busting with the Boys, and it's a really good conversation. There's a lot of good stuff in there. Matt Rhule is an interesting person, down-to-earth guy, has some worldviews that I find really interesting. But then at one point, I think Will Compton, you know what? It might have been Taylor Lewan, who, by the way, is a pretty good question asker. And so is Will, but Lewan's pretty sharp, and he does a pretty good job for being an NFL player, and I suspect he'll be in the media for a very long time when he leaves the NFL. So we asked him, I think, you know, well, how are you going to do this? Like, how are you going to turn around and all the rest? I think it was Lewan who said this, and here's part of Rhule's answer. I don't want this to be a slow burn because I feel like that year for them was last year. What I respected about Nebraska was that the players had just lost their coach, they'd had some tough issues, and they just kept battling. If you go to the Iowa game, the last game of the year, when Iowa has to win it to win the Big Ten West, and you beat them, there's something in that locker room. Now, the back part of that is accurate. You know, Matt Rhule is going to try really hard never to disparage anybody outwardly. Now, he could have said, well, Iowa couldn't hit the broadside of a barn with a brick. I mean, Iowa was a horrible team. In many different ways, except for about six guys on their defense. But whatever, I'm not going to knock Iowa, and Lord knows if Iowa fans hear that, they'll be like, wah! And anyway, I don't want to get into that. Even some of their media seems all fired up all the time. Anyway, but the first part of this, I don't want this to be a slow burn because I feel like that year for them was last year.
You
What's
know what
wrong
I think,
with it being a slow burn?
You know what I think,
why
you know what I think
you
he's doing?
That?
What I think he's doing? And this is a big change, and you can argue with me if you want. I think he's speaking to potential transfers
yes.
right now,
right?
recruits right now, players who are in the program who might still have the opportunity to leave.
Right.
Like, don't tell your guys we're gonna bottom out like we did at Baylor and at Temple,
right?
Okay. I think that's what he's doing. I think he can still have it both ways. I think he's going to get the benefit of the doubt based on how bad it was the last couple years. And I think he can still preach optimism and high standards and high expectations and still get the benefit of the doubt from the fan base that, hey, everybody knows how bad this thing was when he got here. So to me, that comment didn't register a lot. It did register, though, in the fact that, boy, what a change in the last 5 years of college football, where even a guy like Matt Rhule coming into a situation like this isn't talking about bottoming out because, you know, it's just not the way the sport is anymore.
No,
you know, it's just everybody is trying to reload on the fly. So I think Rhule, if he's smart And if his team plays hard, he can still have his cake and eat it too. But I think it was a reflection of how much college football has changed in just 5 years.
Yeah, he's got to dance around that. You can't just go all in and say it's going to be 3 years, guys. Just hang on with us. Yeah, he's trying to get those. I mean, he's got a lot of transfers already.
He does.
I mean, he's got the Georgia, the what are they calling them? The corn dogs are here.
It's a good name.
And these guys don't want to wait.
They'll appreciate it.
Ed Foley's had like 5 corn dogs in the last week.
That's a good meat.
There's two kind exactly. Two kind of corn dogs. Here's the thing where, you know, the NIL is there to bring transfers from Georgia here. And it's doing a very nice job, I might add.
Yes.
So those guys don't want to wait. Of course, they just want their money, probably. They're not, let's be honest. So I think he's got to say both. But what you don't want to say, you don't want to make promises right now. You don't want to promise we're going to kick butt in the Big Ten.
By year two.
We're going to do this. We're going to do that. You wait. You know, you don't want to, you don't need to say any of that. This whole thing about is Nebraska starting from scratch. Well, when you have transfers, you don't have to start from scratch. But where they do need to start from scratch is learning how to win, learning how to close games, learning how to do the right thing every day, learning how to hit hard, go to practice, and you're pounding each other. They haven't done any of that stuff, so they got to learn how to do that. That's where they're starting from scratch, but. It doesn't mean you have to go 0-12. It just means that sometimes it doesn't have to take a whole season to learn how to do that either. So that's why I think spring football is going to be very interesting. It should be a lot of hitting and a lot of guys trying to figure out who wants to be here.
Highly competitive.
I think maybe a month ago, it was probably end of December. I think Hausman had just left. Nelson had just decided to leave. Like, I was pretty down on their chances next year. Mm-hmm. I thought they were going to kind of embrace the bottom-out approach. And then, man, they've gone crazy in the transfer market over the last 3-4 weeks.
You said finally Nebraska's going to bottom out. And now Matt
Rule. Is that what I said verbatim?
Yeah.
Well, he might think that too. But the transfer situation has been very encouraging.
What does that say about the program that they can get those guys from Georgia, who could probably go anywhere? That they can get any transfers at all right now. What does that say about the money? Right, the money. But people still have hope for Nebraska.
Nebraska's always been a nice place because they got nice facilities. They got, you eat like a king. They spend $4 million on food. I don't even know how that's possible. But you eat like a king. You're a celebrity on campus, whether you win, go to a bowl game or not. I mean, you play for Nebraska football? You won just 3 games last year? We care about you as a person. That's how people are. So, like, I think it's fun to go to Nebraska. I think a lot of these guys like it. They just don't win games.
Yeah.
It's just, I don't know. Like, I was surprised he said that, but then I'm a little surprised that they've added as many players as they did. I thought they would go after the transfers. I thought they'd keep it a little lighter number-wise with the freshmen. And just say, you know what? We're not going to add too many kids right now. We're going to get the guys who are here. You know, we're going to get their butts in gear. And then we're going to add our guys in this next class. And we're going to add 30 of them because we'll know them. And they didn't do that.
They might do that anyway, though.
They might do it anyway. But, man, if you're serious about being a developmental program, then you kind of got to stick with these kids that you just added and give them 2 years.
Yeah.
Because I don't look at that group of players and see – starter, 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 starter. Like, I don't see a lot of that. I see maybe a couple of starters, but out of that 27, I'm guessing quite a few are going to redshirt.
Yeah, there's a few ready-made guys, but I actually look at this optimistically that I would rather have guys, transfers who come in and have 3 years, 4 years, you know.
Help them do
I'd rather have that than, this guy has 1 year to play, and he's a grad transfer, and then he's gone. Like, to me, that's the quick fix stuff that you want to avoid as a first-year head coach. So I'm actually okay with the transfer stuff when it includes so many young guys.
See, this will be the balance that he's going to have to learn on the fly, and that is okay, you got your kids who are going to develop to sit back in the shadows for 2 or 3 years and learn and move their way up. When they get to where they want to play, they don't want some other guy from some other place in front of them. They're ready to go. So you can't bring a lot of transfers in because the guys that you develop, you're going to be developing them for somebody else because they're going to leave. So it's really going to be a balance for him. Okay, I promised this kid if he did all this stuff, he's going to play one day. I can't bring some other guy in and the guy's place. So, but yet it's a very competitive conference. He's going to need guys who make plays. So
it's a great point, Tom. Like, you know, to walk that line between rewarding guys for development and, you know, we see this in high school sports too, by the way, where you got a kid that works his ass off and, oh, hey, we just added a starting, you know. Yeah. I mean, it's tough.
I'm not sure we should see it in high school sports, but we do.
Right.
College to me is different. Like, once you go beyond high school, how hard you work, but it happens in high school all the
time.
It's
a detriment to your credibility.
The gym teacher needs to win lots of games.
It's a detriment to your credibility and your player relationships if you do that multiple times where a kid doesn't feel like he got rewarded for development.
And I'm not trying to knock high school coaches or gym teachers. I mean, they're wonderful. But my point is that in high school when this stuff happens, like the thought processes and what's the larger end game here? Like, when you add a bunch of transfers from other places, especially when they're like seniors coming in, like what is the larger, you know, like isn't high school supposed to be about development and pretty much about that? Like, is it important to bring in a kid and win games? What is the corollary to your academic performance? Like all those things. In college, it really is about winning. So if you bring in guys that help you win,
In high school, it's all about winning. It has been.
I'm not just sure.
OSA culture. Yeah. Parents want to go where they can win and get a scholarship. So same thing in high school.
They do.
So, but the weird thing about Omaha high schools is, there's like 4 or 5 schools at the very top who get a lot of the transfers.
They're essentially prep schools.
They're big feeder programs. The other ones are trying to just hang in there. But there's 4 or 5 at the top and beat the hell out of everybody else.
Yeah, I'm not sure that's a good thing long term. I actually think it's better. And of course, Creighton Prep was always that when I was a kid in the 80s and the 90s.
Right.
It's a private school, and Scud is that now. I guess I'm talking about public schools, and I don't know. Like I long term, I think one of the reasons why I'm drawn to Class B at times in sports in Nebraska is because it's a town. And it's a town, and it's a town, and if it's a Class B prep school, or I'm drawn to that more than I'm drawn to in Class B. It feels like it's York and Seward and Norris, and it doesn't feel like, you know, the whole city of Omaha that just happened to congregate
here comes
at this school.
Here comes Bennington.
I know.
They feel like Grunter right now.
But, you know, they're a town.
But it's still Bennington. It's still an identity.
If you drive up there, the housing is booming, and
it is,
and that's where people are going that way. And so, but you've had Scott that had the pick of anybody they wanted at that level, and acting kind of like Class A in some ways, but Class B. Mm-hmm.
The lightning rods right now are West Side and Bellevue West.
Mm-hmm. And they've got great players, and I don't begrudge any of that.
I say Gretna, but I don't know what's going to happen to Gretna.
I'm just saying that like it may not be a good thing for the overall athletic health of the city in terms of prep sports, to have only a handful of schools, because if you think to yourself, and this is true of silos out in the world, not just in sports, well, if I don't go to Harvard or Yale or Princeton, I'm not going to have a life. That's kind of what it becomes. Now, that's not true in the academic world, but there are people that are like, well, you have to go to these 5 schools in order to do anything. And if you don't go to one of those 5, then you're not going to be this, this, or this. And if you go there and you don't play, then you won't be this, this, or this. So you might just not want to try.
Yeah, I had this.
I don't like that. I don't like that feeling.
I had this conversation with Steve Warren not long ago, and he feels the same way. But we were talking about the OPS future, and a lot of people are worried about it, and where it's going to go, and how many teams are going to be around.
It's tough.
Yeah. So
it's just, and we've gotten off on a tangent here.
Right.
The point is that in college, I think all the bets are off on that stuff. It's not.
I'm just saying it hurts your credibility as a head coach.
Yeah.
It does.
But I think limiting the transfers to one will help, but people are still going to, I'm going to use my one now. I don't think
they're going to limit them. I don't know how they're going to be able to limit transfers.
Yeah.
I think maybe if you can sit out a year, maybe that. Right now what you have in college athletics is total unfettered free agency. It's like Patrick Mahomes could go to a different NFL team every single year. That's what we have in college.
And Sam, it's a great lesson, and college should have learned it a long time ago, but it's a great lesson that if school administrators and the NCAA doesn't grab this stuff, doesn't take control of this stuff, you'll lose control. Right. I mean, it's like trying to hop on board a rhino or a lion. Like you better control it early, because if you don't, like, there's no getting off it. It's not going to get better as you go. Laissez-faire does not work in this case.
Fair enough. All right. I think that's all for us this week on the Pick 6 podcast. I think next week we'll talk a little bit more about Nebraska basketball, but we'll have signing day to recap. Nebraska will have a signing day. Matt Rhule will talk. We're going to hear from some Husker football assistants on Monday. I don't know which ones. And then Rhule will talk on Wednesday, so we'll have more to talk about then, about what they're going to do in the spring and where things go from here. For Tom, for Dirk, I'm Sam. Thanks for listening to the Pick 6 podcast.